Good afternoon. Good afternoon, planet Earth. It's almost 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time here in Scompton, Utah. It's Saturday. Have fun. Grab the beach ball. Grab the boat. Grab the life preserver. Grab your kids. Grab your dog. Grab your cabin. Grab your Jeep. Grab your side-by-side. Grab your shotgun. It's Saturday. You're gonna go to the country. Enjoy the weather. Enjoy the grass. Because it is Saturday, June the 17th, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc, and it's your good friend Dan here in Scompton. And you all know about Scompton. Scompton's a tough place. Scompton's not for the feeble-minded. Scompton's not for the soft hand. If you don't want to go to the coast of India and tear apart a ship in your underwear with nothing but an acetylene torch, motherfucker, then you're not ready for Scompton. If you don't have tumors visible on your skin, you're not ready for Scompton. If your cataracts are not blocking out your, you know, sight, you're not ready for Scompton. But not far from Scompton, in fact, just across the river. A really dirty, nasty river that catches fire. There are no fish, but there's styrofoam. Across that wretched river where people dump babies and puppies and kittens. There's a town called Splunkton. I knew a girl from Splunkton. She had blonde hair and brown teeth and eyes covered in risket toads. She'd been living rough down by the wharf with Fat Charlie and his Dorbo thugs selling scud maggots to the witches of Quadrant 8. This girl I knew had a brother who worked at the old mill, the factory, the rusty place. That old building where they used to make little kids pull levers on the meat slurry oven, and some of those damn kids would just fall into the vats, and they were cooked and eaten by BLM Antifa, who were working for, you know, George Soros at a club called the Limited Hangout. And you can't buy pesto monkey pizza from Jill any longer. And there ain't no hope for the snake orphans looking for homes, but finding only disdain from a not-so-gentle master. The brother? He had a friend named Todd. Todd sold Gediwax to old-style farmer priests who would come on in from the ongoing Wookiee Wars. And these crazy old freaks would satisfy their cravings for G-Squirrel Night Toxin and Holy Smoke 88. Todd wandered the parks and streets looking for some hooker gal to massage his junk and make him feel special. Todd found a wench named Tanya, and she had black hair and scuzzy eyes and needle marks up and down her thighs. Tanya tugged on your juice pipe and would sell spasm jelly to the frothy funk fellows of Boys Town. Those who would come in from the snow parade and dry off from sweaty steel showers and Turkish-style bathtub nightmares. Those Turkish clubs were something else, baby. There was this club in Splunkton called Tacos, not far from where the general lost his wad. and the eight pudding dudes were strung up like last night's penguin. Sure, you could go into one of those steamers and take a nap and lap it up with Torg the Macedonian, who has eyes of blue and a large trunk. In one of those steam baths, there was a meeting of the Cygden Coalition. They'd been working on a plasma ray gun designed to melt the faces off of the Ponzi bunch from Uptown, where the water don't got no fluoride and there ain't no disease in the soup and you don't wake up with scabble rashes on your junk from where the gamma flies laid eggs. Head of the Cygden Coalition was Nestra Stargroover, a busty maiden who'd seen too much of this greasy world and went to the dark side of the tracks earlier than most. Nestra wore a two-piece bikini made of Kevlar and diamonds. Nestra drove a Harley called Reset that drove around all day, putting people in pods, making scabs eat cricket flour pasta, and shouting shit about owning nothing and 15-minute hooker cities. Nestra had a 12-gauge shotgun called Blessings, and she kept that baby ready to go at any time, as if life were the stuff of life. Nestra kept an old mage called Restic. Restic was chief of fire magic and saw about the bringing forth of expected things that might arise one day when stuff happened, you know, the day after tomorrow. Restic was ordered to hunt for the 7 Kedmer squires of Region 22 whiskey. He felt the ancient burning that could not be assuaged by a rim job or some cheap whiskey fucking. Restic spent years upon Mount Craphead looking for the wisdom of Tarl, but only finding that ancient alienated sadness that creeps into the bones and relieves one of their cupidity and harshness. Restic would exclaim to his neighbors, "I could counsel some fucker to avoid Splunkton because of the meat jerkus and the clan shrieking and the dome fear games, but no one will listen, not one motherfucker cares, and that's a damn shame." There were many in Splunkton angered by what Restic said. Zosh, the fur girder, spent his days wiping the asses of French bulldogs. As all fur girders before him, he spent his days hustling near Mercer Island and Hilltop, not too far from Dory Street, where those teachers were massacred last Christmas. As chief fur girder, Zosh was meant to hunt down the profane and heretical teachers, and none was worse than Restic. But even Restic, with his Werner Herzog pose, and his 3 Glock 19s, and his powerful fury, even that guy was nothing compared with Rory Cutlass, the king of town cars. Rory Cutlass sold town cars to the mistress maidens near grid 008. Rory had a lot of fancy friends that spent their days doing coke and fucking sex yorgs. After many years, Rory was confronted by a space goddess named Tyr. Tyr was the cosmic power wench, streaking across the universe at 900 times the speed of love. Tyr had a space battleship made of cubic zirconia and plutonium cake magnets. Tyr was moving her primary fleet to Venus orbit when the commander of all Skog ships, General Hank, contacted Tyr and asked if she was willing to combine forces in order to destroy the death robots from the Forbidden Zone within the Forbidden Zone. Yeah. General Hank had just finished patrolling the edge of the solar system. In a star cutter, a beautiful starship called the Maestra. The Maestra cruised the outer solar system at 1/100th the speed of light. That fine vessel had twin-pulsed ion plasma drives with antimatter injection and cold stone creamery. The Maestra held steady her course through the black edge. She coasted out there like a dark lady looking for a fine man in a cheap hotel. And all memories of Splunkton are behind us now. And we can sleep. Yeah, stay away from Splunkton. It's not a place to go. Strange things happen. Let's just leave it there. Leave it right there, Dan. Just stop right there, fucker. You're a shithead, Dan. Next topic is a quote from Dr. Freckles, which is not recommended, but is going to be stated anyways. Hate, hate is the Fjorgurgen that fills the heart with steel, Dr. Freckles. Hate is the Hagmeister that churns the Yeti's soul and burns the bride of the world. Hate is the gusto sauce of total understanding, where sticky blood glows and nigh bows to sin. And the night bows to sin. Hate is the bow bride, no longer seeking after that lost nightly frost lord, but wanting the swamp giddies and the long-eyed Genda's men. Hate is the fuel of the lava that comes from the volcano deep inside your soul because somebody did something to you and you're going to get back at them. Hate is a sense of vengeance over problems you foresee in the world that aren't real, but maybe they're there. Hate is a sense of people having stuff you don't have. It's envy. It's greed. It's jealousy. Next topic, but yeah, what did Dr. Freckles say? Hate is the Fuhrergurgen that fills the heart with steel. That's something that Schwarzenegger should have said in Conan the Barbarian. Fuck you. Next topic. So, anywho, I came across something on social media, and I'm going to read it to you, and then I'm going to go through a process of analytics and hermeneutics and metaphysics and deep, transitory, transcendental, non-vibratory kind of elemental understanding. And this was posted by Planned Parenthood on Twitter. Labeling abortion as only women's rights or a women's issue erases the experiences and identities of queer, non-binary, and trans folks who also have abortions and downplays the additional barriers they face when accessing care. Abortion access affects us all, period. And I was very moved by this, not just because I'm a Christian, but because I try to avoid being confused. And as I've stated in previous podcasts, I think a lot of this shit has no purpose but to piss people off. That's it. I don't care if it's, you know, President Biden looking like a fool at a press conference with some Fetterman-looking Frankenstein standing behind him, or this kind of weird nonsense around gender and gender rights. It's not about protecting one fucking person. It's not about helping anybody. Nobody, no matter where you stand on this issue, is helped by what they're doing. What they're doing is called divide and conquer. What they're doing is deliberately creating situations where people will be pissed off. So when I read this, I'm not asking myself, oh my God, look at what they want to do now. I'm asking myself, what is the intention of this from a PSYOP perspective? It seems to me it's pretty obvious. They want to piss off some people, okay? But here's my response, and let me tell you something. This response comes from the heart because it comes from experience. But before I go too far, I got an activist quote, a rebel quote, a comrade quote, you know, a community organizer quote from Dr. Freckles, poop baby abortions for every fucking clown. Poop baby abortions for every fucking clown. If you're a clown and you have a poop baby, you deserve to have a poop baby abortion. What the fuck's wrong with you? This is my testimony. Last December, on a very cold and icy and cold and slick night, when I didn't really have proper winter clothes or really any good reason to go out except to get a bag of potato chips, I took a walk in Scompton towards the Davis. It was pretty cold out, like, I don't know, 0 degrees. And the sidewalks were pretty slick, and there was a bit of a wind. And maybe there was a demon waiting for me. Someplace out in the darkness, waiting for me to walk by, wanting to slip me up. I slipped and fell and broke my left humerus upon the frozen rocky ice. I broke my humerus into two pieces, and as I sat there and screamed for help, and no help was coming because it was Christmas time and people were on their way to Rockies and they were going to enjoy themselves, and nobody sees a person in the street asking for help. So I asked for help for a couple minutes, and then I just got up on my own. Clickety-clackety, clickety-clackety, the two pieces of humerus bone clickety-clackety together all the way home. I hope I was in a state of shock. I'm pretty certain I was. And I was lucky one of those two sharp pieces didn't stick through the skin. If that had happened, I think I would have died right there. Ain't nobody gonna help you. This ain't the world you think it is. None of the world was what you thought it was. People are what they are. Grow the fuck up. So I got up off my ass. I got to the hospital. They wrapped it up as best they could in Scompton. I waited for a while to get surgery. Arguably, it's like having a trauma, but waiting a week and a half. And that's not so good, but that is what it is. But they gave me painkillers. In fact, they kept pushing painkillers up until the very end. You want any painkillers, Dan? You want any painkillers? So they gave me the Percocet. And I did not drink enough water. And I ate too much cheese. And I did not poop for 4 days. By day 4, I knew I was in my first trimester of a poop baby. Yes, that Percocet and the not drinking the water and the eating the cheese. The eating the cheeseburgers and the other things. No fiber. And did I mention I was dehydrated? Yeah. 4 days later, I realized I was in the... Actually, no. I was in the third trimester of a poop baby. And I wanted to have a poop abortion, but no one allowed it. I called the hospital and said, can you abort my poop baby? And they refused. They said, why don't you have your dirty poop baby in a dirty poop hospital and have a poop doctor deliver it? That's what they told me. That's sad. That's Christmas time in Scompton. So later that night, not at a manger with some star above, no, not with a drummer boy beating out the beat, no, there were no donkeys or cows. Later that night, I went through, you know, about 4 hours of labor and gave birth to 11-pound, 5-ounce poop baby. It was greasy and hard and painful and bloody. It took like 4 or 5 hours, and at one point, I had to use a spoon to pry it out. And all because I did not have access to any type of situation as a hobo clown type gender to get my poop baby abortion. They could have stuck a tube up there. They could have used an impact hammer. You know that ultrasound device? They could have used that thing to break up that poop baby, and maybe it wouldn't have been such a fucking bloody mess, but it was. This is my testimony. They could have gotten the plumber's helper, you know. Yes, my poop baby. No, you cannot get abortions for poop babies. I found this out. Nobody's going to fund a poop baby. They're not going to do it. They're not going to fund it. You might need help, but they're not going to give you the help. Not for a poop baby. I'm going to read you an article and then we'll talk about it. This article was originally published in the Epoch Times, I mean the Mossad, CIA Daily. Headline, researchers create synthetic human embryos without sperm or eggs. And the author is Naveen Athrapouli. Wow, great. Scientists have created synthetic human embryos from stem cells without using eggs or sperm in a development that raises challenging and moral and legal questions. Oh, this is horrible. Synthetic embryos, also known as embryo models, are not equal to actual human embryos. Instead, they look similar to the early stages of human development and show no signs. they look similar, but show no signs of the beginnings of a brain or a beating heart. However, it contains cells that typically end up forming the placenta, yolk sac, and the embryo. The development of synthetic human embryos was revealed, at the International Society for Stem Cell Research annual meeting in Boston on Wednesday by Professor Magdalena Zernica-Getz from the University of Cambridge and the California Institute of Technology. The research has not been peer-reviewed, really, and is yet to be published, Zernica-Getz said at the event. I just wish to stress that they are not human embryos, Zernica-Getz said to CNN. They are embryo models, but they are very exciting because they are very looking similar to human embryos and very important path towards discovery of why so many pregnancies fail. As the majority of pregnancies fail around the time of the development at which we build these embryo-like structures. The synthetic human embryos were grown from single human embryonic stem cells that were made to develop into 3 distinct tissue layers. Huh, where did you get those stem cells? At present, the synthetic model embryos are restricted to test tubes. According to Zernike Goetz, her research is not aimed at creating life, but at preventing the loss of life. She and her team had earlier created model embryos from mouse stem cells that had shown the initial states of a brain and a heart. The development has raised concerns about its implications. Synthetic human embryos created. This falls outside the boundary of current ethical and moral consideration and legality, Peter Dane, an activist with UK's Reform Party, said on a June 15 post on Twitter. Many human developments, with AI being another, are now overtaking the ability of society to respond and assimilate. Huh, sounds like a psyop, though, too. Brothers and sisters, you can read the rest of this garbage. It looks like crap. I will tell you what I'll tell you, and I'll say it the following way. Every 5 or 10 years, NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Agency, is looking for more money. And this has been true, I think, since the 1990s. And so like every 5 or 10 years for the last 20, 30 years, NASA will say, "We found life on Mars. We found evidence of life on Mars. It's not very good evidence of life on Mars, but if you give us more money, we'll bring you more evidence of life on Mars." And they do this over and over again. I've counted at least a couple times in my life that NASA has found evidence of life on Mars, and usually it coincides with some sort of a budget issue. And so I would say, with respect to the issue of Pride Month, it doesn't seem sort of accidental or coincidental that they announce a scientific discovery of creating some type of what? Chromosomoid embryo that has no parents or apparent sex. Basically a garbage baby. A psyop garbage baby. But here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. "Garbage baby is the hero of Pride Month." Yeah, this is a bullshit story, folks. There was a story also on Zero Hedge about Toyota announcing magical batteries, really amazing batteries for electric vehicles. It'll be available in the year 2027, Bob Limpdock. And that's the thing about the magical batteries and the magical babies and the magical fusion drives and the magical trips to Mars. They're always next year or next decade or sometime in the future. Right around the corner, we promise. Magical robots are going to take over. No, not now, but probably in a year or two. That's what they'll tell you for every year since 1975. Yeah, it's funny. A lot of these climate skeptics will complain. "Well, back in the 70s, they were telling us that the Earth was going to cool into an ice age." Yeah, 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 shithead. Back in the 70s, they were telling me I'd be doing the disco on Mars by now. That I would have my second robot wife by now. Let's all get over the bullshit that we were told back in the 70s, okay? Maybe it was all a mindfuck, motherfucker. Maybe this article is bullshit. Maybe the article about Toyota and their magical fucking battery is bullshit. Maybe the reason why they're dumping all these low-rent trailer park pillhead psyops on your head right now is this is the brief intermission. Act 1, COVID is over. Act 2, Ukraine is looking boring. Act 3 is coming up. Maybe it'll involve Daniel Penny action. Maybe. But it looks like Act 3 is going to be the real deal, whatever the fuck it is. So yeah, have fun with your garbage baby. Next fucking garbage baby topic is what I say. Thank you. I lost the stream of that. I lost that. On the streets, people are forced to walk knee-deep. On the streets, there is grizzle and crizzle and blood and monktus on the streets. There is the grease wax that falls from the hobo's ears on the streets. There's the mucus that comes out of your nose because you're snootifying on the streets. There's whatever brunctus you brought out of the pizza parlor and the bottom of your shoe on the streets. On the streets, people are forced to walk knee-deep in poop water. On the streets, the old people drown in shark urine and pear wine. On the streets. Most people have to hunt down flesh enchilada. I should say flesh enchilada sauce. And viscera souffle as the AK-47s wail and hum their song of splendor in the great beyond. Our cow pie selfies permit no new encouragement, and the tourist gliders pick up their kale juice from the barber and his whore on the streets. On the streets, you fornicate with your landlord so that you can keep your cat despite not paying the pet fee. And your landlord is not a gentle lover, and you're getting angrier and angrier every time. And so you decide to chop up your landlord and feed it to your cat on the streets. You make a knife from some broken glass, and you slit that guy's throat for a pocket full of rock and some lucky strikes. And you have whiskey breath and herpes sores on your anus on the streets. You've been living on the streets, living off of whatever you can find in any old place on the streets. You have women in every other room on the streets. You go from hotel to hotel on the streets. And if someone runs into you, they're going to have a bad night on the streets. Kester, the nag ghoul, chases you down the alley with his cadre of fender goobs, armed with bicycle chain and Rogaine and propane and baseball bats. And you know you are getting tired, and you know no one cares, and you run harder and harder and harder in the darkness. You get to Central Park, and some cop looks at you and says, "Stop," but you don't stop, so the cop shoots at you, and then a dog starts chasing you, and then somebody on horseback starts attacking you, and every other human turns into a robot and fires their proton cannon at you on the streets. And nobody cares, motherfucker. There is no salvation for the gutter rat that chews on his own morning glory, and the next toe you find might be your mama, and she's looking good on the streets. Yeah, the streets are tough in Scompton. I don't know what to tell you. Splunkton is bad. Scompton's bad. Grinkentown is bad. L.A. is bad. South Chicago is bad. Lots of places are bad these days on the streets. Thank you. And this is the last topic for this particular podcast. And this is a quote from Dr. Freckles. "We really are living in a world now where everyone inhabits their own designed reality." Dr. Freckles, what does that mean? We are really living in a world now where everyone, everybody, inhabits their own designed reality. Dr. Freckles, what the fuck does that mean? Well, I've said this in the past, and I'll say it again. The oldest fucking profession, the oldest job you could get is not prostitute, not spear chucker. It's none of the things you think. The oldest profession is grifter. It's con artist. It's part of who we are. If you're an atheist, this goes back to probably, I don't know. I mean, think about it. You ever wonder what happened to the Neanderthal? Maybe it's the same shit that happened to those fucking buffalo in the painting. My point is, maybe one of the things we did to the Neanderthal is we basically outgrifted them. Maybe they were smart, brilliant. Maybe Neanderthal were brilliant and loving and caring and kind and trusting, basically rubes from our perspective. Marx. It's like we go over for dinner at the Neanderthal house. Aren't you supposed to be nice, Neanderthal? Aren't you supposed to be friendly? Will you let me have sex with your wife? Yeah, it could have been something like that. But the point is, the Neanderthal are gone. All that's left of them, supposedly, are the vestiges, the pieces, the junk of genetic material that some of you find when you go to 23andMe. Yeah. What if the Neanderthal were really trusting, good creatures? What if they were brilliant and wise and good and had a big old warm heart, and the one thing they were not good at was being deceptive? What if that's why human beings won? It wasn't because we were smarter. Frankly, it's because we were shittier. We were willing to go to a level that these Neanderthal were never willing to go to. We were the ones that would chase a bunch of buffalo into a ravine, knowing full well that our bellies, and even if we had all of our little drying areas, knowing full well that we would not eat all those buffaloes, but we don't fucking care because we're Homo sapiens and we rule the planet. Yeah. We ate, murdered, ate, and fucked all the Neanderthal. And we probably did this by being bigger dicks. And then we decided to create cities. But did we really? I mean, did we have to have cities? But we were fed government. Why did we need government? Well, another grifter comes along. Another grifter makes promises. The grifter this time says, ignore the pillars of smoke in the distance, though. But the grifter makes promises of power and gold and diamonds and control, and the whole world is yours. The entire spiel that Satan gave to Jesus and Samuel warned the Israelites against. The whole spiel of having a worldly king, a government, people in charge. And I would contend that the very first societies built around governments were like a kind of simulation. I mean, obviously, low resolution, no computers involved, but in terms of the way that city life abstracted existence away from life in nature, that began 7,000 fucking years ago, okay? That started a long time ago. It may have accelerated in the age of personal technology, but it began a while back, my friends. I remember having a conversation with my cousin who died this last year, not 23, but in the year 2022. And we were sitting down, and he was talking about his students and his life and where he lived. And he said he didn't understand how people could be unhappy. And this was the year 2016. And so I went through the process of explaining, you live off of Emory campus, not far from the CDC, in a little part of Atlanta, where probably if you call the cops show up and maybe they even do what they're supposed to do. That's where you live. Your students are mostly from upper class families. Your students come from the same type of cocoon existence that you come from, my cousin. And so, from your perspective, I'm sure everything looks great. And what's funny is, I ended up having this conversation with him before I did a podcast in 2019 called The Stranded Unconscious Skier. But one thing to understand about the US economy since 2008, probably since 9/11, but and maybe longer, but definitely since 2008, is it's really two different economies. There's the real economy, and it's basically been dying. It's been dying on bogus money. It's been dying on crooked deals. It's been dying on a lack of proper capital investment. It's been dying. And then there's the magical economy, the donut around Washington, D.C. Various research triangles involved in biological and security bullshit. The military industrial complex has been doing well. And then there's house flipping, house flipping, house flipping, and healthcare. And if you were involved in any of that nonsense between the year 2008, really, let's say 2010, and the year 2019, for the most part, that period of time probably seemed okay. But for a lot of people who were on the outside of that fantasy, it was like the world was falling apart. And once again, I get back to our skier. You know, the skier, he's coming from Seattle. He's going up to what? He's going up to Mount Baker. He's going to go down one of those ski rides late. There's a underwear model festival at the chalet, and he doesn't want to be late. But he has a little accident on the way down one of those red trails, and he's unconscious, and he's slowly dying of hypothermia. But in his head, he's having a fantasy about being at the chalet and drinking champagne with the busty underwear models and playing grab ass, and life is good. The rest of his body is dying. In a matter of an hour or two, he's going to have enough frostbite and enough hypothermia that even if he lives, they're going to have to cut off his arms and legs. But from his perspective, from his little internal fantasy, everything is okay. If you rode the Metro to Microsoft in the summer of 2019, you would have seen people staring at their smart devices, having real conversations about video game worlds, and you would have realized how deeply nested these fake realities are now. And for the most part, they serve the state. For the most part, they serve the people in control. We are living in a world right now where everybody inhabits their own designed reality. And I don't think this is accidental. I did a podcast earlier today on psychological warfare. And one of the things about managing a population is a big part of it is managing the information they have access to. And it's not as simple as, do they read the New York Times? It's that. It's where they buy clothes. It's the shows they watch. I mean, think about all the commercials where in the last decade there have been weird changes. It's almost like there's an agenda being pushed, but you don't want to name it because you'll get in trouble. And none of this is accidental, like I said. One of the reasons why the COVID-19 psyop, the bullshit pandemic, was so successful is because of a game called Pokemon Go. And you say, well, Dan, what does Pokemon Go have to do with COVID-19? Here's what it has to do with. People were playing that game about a decade or so ago, maybe 8, 9 years ago. They were playing that fucking stupid ass game. I think maybe 2015, 2016, and they were wandering around on places, on properties in the United States where they weren't supposed to be. They were going off the reservation, so to speak. But what the game really illustrated was the extent to which people have already merged fake reality with reality. Bullshit. Stuff that doesn't exist. In fact, the distinction between the real and the fake at this point is so blurry that I'm not sure arguing for facts even works any longer. Because where are your facts? Are they the ISIS beheading videos? Oh, the old guy that fell over and we saw the little plastic tube? Show me your fucking facts, baby. A lot of the stuff that's being sold as factual looks like garbage to me. And frankly, there'd be no way to know. Okay, once you lose that trust, once it's gone, it's gone. And by the way, this was probably also a weakness of the Neanderthal. They should have had a fucking point at which they said, you know what, Homo sapien dude, you're real nice, you fucked my wife and my mom and my daughter. And you seem so great eating all my food and drinking all my fermented apple juice. But maybe it's about time, Homo sapien, that you fuck off. Was there ever a point where some Neanderthal realized they were being fucked with? Was there ever that moment? That's the question. For all the Neanderthals out there right now who are sopping up the latest scaremongery bullshit, for all the people obsessed with Biden having dementia and the war in Ukraine and whatever drag queen horror show they're popping up with and whatever fake bullshit disease they're threatening you with, for all that crap out there, are there people saying, I call bullshit? A few here and there, but a lot of people are still looking to trust something. And maybe that's the Neanderthal DNA in us. Maybe that's the impurity. This willingness to trust authority to the point of incredulity. You know? Because Dan, what would we do? What would we do if we weren't told what to do? What would we do if we didn't live in a prison? How would we be safe without bars? How would we be safe without cops, Dan? How could we protect ourselves without fire people and cops? How could we survive without public roads? How could we live without nuclear weapons, Dan? I was playing this game, and it showed very clearly, based upon the outcomes, that if you don't have nukes, you get destroyed, Dan, and the game was very, very well done. If you took the Metro bus ride from downtown Seattle to Redmond, Washington in the summer of 2019, and you looked around that motherfucking bus before the monkey hip herpes hit, before the race war, before Putin bullshit, before a lot of the crap was being throttled down our throats like a junkie whoremonger's crispy wife, if you rode that motherfucking infernal bus from Seattle to Redmond, you would see a lot of people staring at their fucking phones. You wouldn't see conversations. There wouldn't be any type of real understanding, just a lot of people in their own private little world. And if they stopped to have a conversation, like I said, it was usually about a game. We really are living in a world now where everyone inhabits their own designed reality. Dr. Freckles. If you enjoy this podcast, and I'm not entirely sure why, but if you enjoy it, you really like it, and you want to support it, you can, but I got to give you the speech. Take care of your food, water, shelter first. If there are people in your life that need help, help them first. If you've set aside food for yourself and your family, and I don't think there's a magic number, but let's say 6 months, make sure you're setting aside some food for your pet, your dog or your cat, your fish or your bat. I have a special place in my heart for dogs, but make sure you're thinking about your pets when you're thinking about yourself. And the world is not ending. It's not the end of the world. It's not the end of everything. Do I personally believe some pretty difficult rapids are ahead? Yeah. I think if you've listened to my podcast since 2019, you know that we're in class 3, 4, and 5 rapids. And we entered them in November 2019. So yeah, it's going to be crazy. It could be crazy, and it could be ugly and monstrous, and it could be wonderful, and it could be adventurous, and it's called the future, and history is unstuck. The only sad sack at this point is Francis Fukuyama that thought history had ended. That's the person in trouble. But for the rest of us, it's going to be a glorious rafting ride. And it will be amazing, but that's the future. And with respect to life now, live it. Don't live it with reckless abandon. Live it the way you're supposed to. If you're a Christian, live the kingdom life and try to be happy. If you're an atheist, try to be happy. Try to find some joy. If there's a little bit of normality left around, take advantage of it. If you have the wherewithal to go to a restaurant with your family and there's still a restaurant you'd want to go to and you don't have to wear a coffee filter or do the coffee filter kabuki, wear the coffee filter in, take it off when you sit down, wear the coffee filter in, take it off when you sit down. There's magical physics around this that I could explain to you within the realm of thermodynamics. If there's a restaurant where you don't have to do that stupid shit, you can just go there without a coffee filter and just sit down and not have to take it off, do that. Go for a walk. Visit a friend you haven't visited in a long time. See a family member you haven't seen. There are plenty of useful things you can do to include do things that make you happy and live your fucking life. Nobody knows what tomorrow's going to be. I don't claim to be a soothsayer. Will I give myself a B, maybe a B plus sometimes, for a lot of my predictions since 2019? Sure. But I don't know the future. I'm just making guesses. Intuitive guesses based upon information I have. That's it. And as I've said over and over again, it's not the end of the world. So enjoy your life. But if after enjoying your life and helping your friends and making sure there's food for your dog and taking care of rent and other things, and if after all this you still have gold and diamonds and cubic zirconia and Kevlar vests and 9mm ammo and hookers and cocaine left over, well, you can convert any or all of that to some form of cash, and then you can click on that PayPal link in the notes or on Spotify, or on YouTube until they ban me again, and you can donate. Donate as much as you want to. I'll use the money for cocaine, and hookers, and lovers, and futures, and starships. I'll build a tank made out of brass. I'll travel the sand dunes until I find my special queen. We'll build a kingdom out of thatch, and one day our children will rule all of Boblimpdok. As the waves rise up and the cattle find their way home, and the chickens learn how to dance the boogie. Donate as much or as little as you want to, and maybe the best donation you can do, other than listen, is recommend me to friends of yours who are just as fucking crazy as you are. Anywho, for Saturday, it's almost 3 p.m., almost 3 p.m. here in Scompton, Utah. That's Mountain Standard Time. Go out and find yourself a whiskey lover. Go out and find yourself a bowl of chili. Go out tonight and go to a strip club. Take home a stripper named Camise. But stay out of Splunkton. Stay out of Splunkton. It's a doom city. Thank you. and have a great Saturday night.